Cropod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the Cropod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
The road to the Super Bowl is long and pointless. I mean, when you think about it.
Football's so great.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cropod, the Rangers podcast. Much like a opposing manager rocking up for his first match to Ibrox in a navy suit and brown brogues, I think we could accurately be described as the Neil Warnock of Rangers shows here, I believe. And of course, joining me is the curmudgeon old man himself, David Edgar. Hello, David.
I always think of myself as the optimistic one on this show. genuinely,
sadly true.
I think that speaks volumes of what this show actually is.
Genuinely taken aback at that one. Yes, I think, as we'll discuss, I bow to no man in my admiration of the legend that is Neil Warnock. It was gutted to see him turn up as Aberdeen manager, but it did mean that I got to sit in a press conference with him, in which he was everything you would hope for. Yes. At one point, incidentally, he was there last night. Introduce Todd, and then I'll tell you all the stuff he got up to.
Hi, honestly, Todd.
Hi. Get into that story, and then I have a word for you.
Right. Well. Right. So Neil Warnock arrives last night. As Shane says, he gets off the Aberdeen bus, and he is wearing a navy blue suit, a blue tie, and brown brogues.
Yeah, dress for the job you want, not the one you have.
Then,
well, see, I said, you know, David, gutted to see him turn up as Aberdeen manager. Delighted to see him cosplaying as Rangers manager.
As Rangers,
absolutely.
But, yeah. I don't know if he just said, "Oh, that's my Ibrox suit," because he's been there before as a guest in the club,
went into
autopilot. But so he turns up. Now, here's one thing: the Sky cameras followed him, and they follow him through the front door at Ibrox, front door, where he stops to chat and hug the reception staff, because of course he knows them, right?
Yeah,
right.
So he then heads down to the right as you go in, and they have to bring him back and say, "No, Neil, you're not, that's the home dressing room. You going down here." He then comes out for a look round the stadium and has a walk and sits in the home dugout and just takes it in. And I was up on the gantry early setting up, and myself and Adam were watching him, and it's more like a sponsor, you know, being taken round and showing.
Yeah, taking the tour.
Yeah, yeah. You take the tour. And here are that was more what it was like. So then, rather brilliantly, for reasons that only the insane can justify and us mortals must just know, he then changes out of his suit and brogues into a tracksuit and football. Well,
that yes. is his management attire
for the right. game. And he then changes back out of that to his suit for the press conference. He comes into the press conference and he was hilarious. Some people have been getting a bit annoyed. I think you should watch it to see the tone. He was talking about the ball boys.
Okay.
And he said, you know, the ball boys here, they train them with the first team. They only throw when they're winning. You don't get the ball back, and when they're losing, they hurry up. And people will say, oh, you know, that his team were you know, lying down and stuff, and they were, you know, trying to break the game up. I was like, our ball boys are great. That's exactly what I want from our ball. That's common sense. You know, if you're holding on
so that's a properly drilled ball boy contingent.
100%. When we're chasing a goal, they're rapid, and when we're not, they take their time. They'll just, and, you know, I think that's perfectly legit.
Well, but I mean, look, they had their own ball boy, you know, in the center circle out there. Is Don Robertson doing Don his Robertson. Best?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
But the thing that topped it off is someone, you know, and he honestly, my thought on it is he is just here for a laugh, right? Because he was just loving it. And he's like, oh, magnificent stadium, amazing fans. That's the kind of game I would be involved in. And I actually thought he's going to resign tomorrow. He just wanted to come in, you know, to do this. But he was asked, do you think Aberdeen can, you know, what did you take from the game? And he said, well, I thought maybe some of the younger boys were a bit overawed, but they stuck at it. And I was impressed with our centre half. You know, the stuff, Miovski is a great player.
Yeah, you're supposed to say when you lose a 2-1.
I thought it was a reasonably fair assessment of what he'd seen. But he also said, they've got some bloody good players, eh? Bloody hell. talked about us. And then, just to top it off, a question from one of the reporters. He said, you know, I haven't watched that, Neil. Do you think you can achieve top six? He says, I haven't really looked at league table, to be honest.
Jesus Christ.
I'm 75. You can't look any further than the next game because you don't know if you'll be here for it.
Oh, Jesus.
Which was just brilliant. And I just thought he is giving absolutely
so
no
whatever you do, don't jump out of like an alleyway. How you doing?
Yeah.
What's up, Neil?
I thought that was a pretty.
How's the kicker?
But he's got a point. What's the point about thinking, right, you know, long term? He's 75. He's like, I'm just happy to be here. But he had an absolute ball. Big win, two big wins for us. And then obviously with the Celtic game at the weekend, it's been a pretty good run.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, Big Phil getting his manager of the month trophy there. So,
in his fist pumping glory, it's good.
Yeah.
And not losing after it, which is usually the curse.
Yeah, which is usually the case.
Exactly.
It was all good. It was a really good atmosphere last night and Saturday, actually, it was good. It was noticeable.
Yeah.
The people are, you know, excited, and obviously you get a bit nervous because, you know, we so desperately want to win the league. But there's a lot less moaning and groaning and a lot more, right, come on, lads, you know. So it's all good.
Again, winning will cure everything.
Yeah. It
really does.
Especially at this club.
It's to that point, David, I just want to throw out a word of thanks because I was doing shows all last week, so time was at a premium. The car wasn't available, so I wasn't able to make it to the Ottawa club for the games as much as I would have wanted. So I was watching at home, and the benefit of being at the club or like somewhere like in the stands or like in the company of other Bears, having been through the Beal period of Rangers, where you kind of treated watching the game like being on the lookout for terrorism. It's like, if you see it, say something, right? You see something, say something. So over the past couple of games, when I was watching at home, I was like, hang on. And I had this nagging thing in my head of like, I can't be seeing this, but I am, I can't be. And then David, when he brought together the five families, but they're three, this past week, talked about the fact that yes, indeed, Tav is going inside more.
Yeah.
And I went, as soon as you said that, I went, thank you, because there was a piece of my psyche in the back of my head that was the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia yarn pushpin pictures going, no, what's happening is that Jack's coming in once the McCausland is up front and he ducks in so that he can take the run. It's that simple. And thank you Thank you for
we had a note from our good friend of the show, our buddy from Sheffield there, Hugh, pass along. Yes. You know, I don't give a fuck about Michael Beale. I mean, let's be honest.
Sheffield.
I sent along a lovely statistical update that showed, I forget what day this was through. It was sometime last week or something, but that his Sunderland side had produced 79 shots for a total of 5 goals, which is and then the accompanying quote from him of, we're not worried about the quality of shots that we get off, just the number. And it's like, seen that one.
Yeah.
It's a few of them are playing differently. Like Cantwell, he's asking to play a bit differently, and it's obviously working because, you know, he's starting to get the goals. And Tavi's asking, he's not quite as swashbuckling and he has to kind of tuck in a bit more. But I think it's really instructive that, one, they all understand what he's asking them to do.
Well, they have a role
wasn't the case
like
before.
Go do this thing.
Yes, could you do that? Yeah. And secondly, they're all buying into it because they're not just lapsing back into, I don't know what he's, or I don't know why he's asking me to do this, so I'm just going to do what I usually would. They're not doing that. And, you know, a few of them are that you know, I think had deserved criticism early in the season are beginning to play really well. Yo Lundstrom playing a lot better. So yeah, there's a bit exciting. And I really like the look of Silva, who's just really clever.
Yeah.
Great touch, great skill. So, you know, try and get him on the park a bit more. I thought he was excellent last night because you see the hair and the fact he came for the Premier League and you thought, right, will he muck in? And then last night we were right up against it and he's making tackles and holding the ball up and getting kicked while he's doing it and winning through it.
He was doing the Morales work. The peak Morales work. Yeah. Right. Because you get Alfredo would be dragged out of the game, but he's still, you know, tracking down it, closing down the center halves, closing down the holding midfielders, doing all that shit that you have to do to win a match like that.
Yes. I also have done some prep for us.
Oh my god.
Yes. Because of course who knows more about sports than us?
No one.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Right. So I've done a Super Bowl preview.
Here
we go. I'll just get my
What do you got for us here, Dave?
The thing is I'm actually pretty sure that music is over here in the UK. Was the Ski Sunday music. Believe it or not, for years the BBC had a regular skiing program on a Sunday. And
they just share the music around. So.
Yeah. right free. But here is your Super Bowl preview, folks. The Super Bowl is a match held between the two respective champions.
Yes.
Of the AFC, which I think stands for American Football
Conference.
Right. And the NFC, which stands for the American Football Conference.
National.
This season's final will take place. I didn't get that. Somewhere in America. And I've just walked by my front door and Alexis...
Well, I mean, it's Las Vegas. I'm not sure.
Yes, it's Vegas. Okay,
that's really America.
So right. There you go. See, I knew that we would get there. I knew I didn't need to find that out. This season, it will be held between the Kansas City Chiefs, who are supported by Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is a pop star who is well known for her hits, including Shake It About and that other one about the love story. She is dating one of their players, and therefore the Americans want her team to win. They are playing the San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco is a city with a reputation for a wild night spot and lots of homosexuals. The San Francisco 49ers once had a famous player called Joe Montana, but he doesn't play anymore, although I do think he is still alive. Shane is a supporter of the San Francisco 49ers, and I would expect that he would prefer them to win over the Kansas City Taylor Swifts. So there you go, folks. I hope that helped your bet.
You know, I love that we have the... Well, the dichotomy here, right? Because all the, you know, like Taylor Swift is obviously a Joe Biden plant and something.
Yes.
I can't follow all this.
The grace and sophistication of the psyops going on here.
Yes.
Is,
yeah, but see, you know, so that means puts, that, but
it's like five Kennedy assassinations. Oh, yeah. It's so great.
They have to root for the team from San Francisco then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
not really
that's breaking some brains. Like that
it is, yeah, yeah.
Really their city of choice, I would have thought. But Usher apparently doing the halftime. Mm-hmm.
He is.
No idea.
Reba McEntire doing the national anthem, and I think it's a shame that they couldn't have given Las Vegas the 50th. It would have been, the 40th, I guess.
Yeah.
45th, 45th, 55th. LV, whatever that was.
That's covering your bases, isn't it? McIntyre and Usher, give them that. You can't complain that you're not caring to all the audiences. I do have a question though for you, Shane. What the fuck is the Pro Bowl?
This is fun.
Well, you know, we have our all-star game things here.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any gear on and they were just running about with a ball.
Oh, yeah, they're drunk.
Well, the players kind of got sick of, you know, having to go to Hawaii and pretend to play a real football game and pads and all this shit.
Yeah.
So when the last labor contract came up, they were like, nah, look, our season is over.
Yeah.
Because nobody playing in the Super Bowl goes to the Pro Bowl. So like, we're done with this shit. We're going there to party for a week. That's it.
This is the order of popularity of these events. Okay. So it's Super Bowl, right? The tippy top. Depending upon which team or conference you like, is the AFC, NFC finals. Those are kind of neck and neck, depending upon who's in there, right?
Right.
Then it's the Puppy Bowl. And then way down at the bottom of the well is the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, there's like random Thursday fucking mid-season matchups there. I mean, it's fun. The thing was, see, because there was a big deal about the flag football coming back. I don't know if you guys would remember this, but it was around right before the Patriots dynasty kicked off.
Okay.
So right, maybe the end of the Bill Parcells era, the New England Patriots. But they sent Robert Edwards to the Pro Bowl, a running back, who just had like an amazing breakout season and looked like, you know, this is going to be the feature back for the Patriots for the next 5-7 years, whatever it is. And, you know, the Pro Bowl was still out there in Hawaii, and they had started doing beach, sand flag football games, which, you know, who doesn't like throwing the ball around when you're on the beach, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, good imagery and all that. And also, you know, who hasn't seen someone get horribly injured throwing the ball around on the beach every once in a while? Mm-hmm. And Robert Edwards tore all three ligaments in his knee and ended his career. So that was
I have an idea. Maybe if the NFL is listening, because around this time they're always listening to every form of media to make sure we don't say Super Bowl and instead say
I'm actually in Las Vegas.
So here's something that I think we could replace the Pro Bowl with. It reduces the risk for the players. And I think it would give way more entertainment value for those who enjoy football and want to see something. Here it is. Nothing. How about that? We just have nothing. Let them have a break. Let them eat an entire bowl of KFC. It's fine.
Honestly, an eating competition would be fine.
That would be good.
That would be good.
Then one of them gets like a prolapsed something in their abdomen and then they're gone for like because they've got eight hot dogs jammed in there.
Like with the All-Star games, you know, the NHL, the hockey one was this weekend too.
Yes,
I have no idea what the fuck that is anymore. Like I don't get the All-Star game. Yeah, because it's not like what players draft their own teams and then they play like a round robin three on. I have no idea what it's entertaining. I mean, okay, it's hockey. It's on TV.
Right.
But you know, I'm not gonna pretend like I know what the fuck it is anymore. I mean, at least like basketball. Look, they don't play defense, but again, it's an all-star game. Like the players in the Pro Bowl didn't hit, right?
Right?
So them wearing pads didn't fucking matter anymore.
No.
The basketball one is just go with it. The problem, you know, Major League Baseball famously and stupidly, after 2003 ended in a tie, everybody freaked out. So they made the All-Star game decide the World Series.
Right.
Like who gets to host, you know, like home field advantage for the World Series, which is an exhibition game in July, potentially deciding the outcome of your champion.
Right. Here's why. First of all, the hockey one, the hockey All-Star game, you know, it's bad when Justin Bieber is behind the bench. Like that's just that's just problematic. But here's if your sports organization, if your sports league, your setup has the concept of an All-Star game, there's one of two reasons this is happening. One, you are in full control of that, and there's a wall around it. There's no other way for teams to come in. You are the top pinnacle of everything.
It's American sports.
The NFL, the MLB, the NHL, no other teams can kind of come in.
Right.
If your league is not one of those and you have an All-Star game, that means that your league is shit and you rely on other teams to come in and play against it. Hat tip to the MLS. Oh, we're going to have the All-Stars, but they're going to get raped by Barcelona. So
okay. Barcelona on their preseason tour or whatever the fuck it is.
Yes.
Well, what was it? Didn't the Inter Miami travel or something and then Messi didn't show up to play? And now everybody's pissed off.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, we had a few bales that I know from the Hong Kong.
That's what, yes.
Went along and they were very, very drunk. So they had a lovely game. Well, regardless, right?
I mean, to be honest, to be able to watch an MLS side, even if it has, you know, half of the 2012 Barcelona.
Scottish people, particularly Rangers fans, had got together in a place where alcohol, they couldn't give a flying fuck who turned up or who didn't.
But the
locals who don't drink as heavily and are
not aware of the mythos of Neil.
Wanted to go and see Messi, and he didn't play, which was which was a bit of a disappointment to them.
Well, I mean, this is part of the MLS problem, right? It's the same thing with the playoffs last year. They were selling, there were a lot of teams like selling two. Did Toronto go to the playoffs out? I can't remember.
Toronto?
Yeah, you guys did. Okay, yeah, I thought so. But there were a lot of teams selling like two separate ticket packages for the playoffs leading into the playoffs. And one was based around if Messi was there and one if not.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's fucking stupid. Teams were having to like, instead of giving refunds for matches that he wouldn't play, they were trying to offer him as credits against season tickets for next year. And it's like, misreading this room.
I am completely off the boil right now with TFC. I am so fucking livid with that organization. MLSE is treating it like the redheaded stepson of an organization where they already have problems managing their marquee Maple Leafs organization. The fact that Apple TV is a fucking nightmare to negotiate. I have many times while I'm watching the game that I know the fucking score of because they put it in there when you're trying to find the fucking thing. I will just like watch it and then get on Messenger with Apple support and go, you realize your product sucks and that's it. So until the MLS moves off of Apple, I'm fucking.
Well, only eight more years.
You know. I know. Fuck me.
Right, well, Todd, you see
my... I mean, the Chicago Fire might not be there by the time the Apple TV
comes up. That's true.
Well, listen, Todd, you seem a bit down, so I've got something that will cheer you up.
Hello.
Right, do you guys get MasterChef over there?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Right, I assume you have an American version or a Canadian version.
There's even Gordon, a Canadian Gordon version, hosts it.
Yes, yeah. I would assume so, right? Well,
look, if it's a cooking show here, Gordon Ramsay hosts it.
Right, yeah, we're watching Next Level Chef right now. It is a banger. Yeah,
in Britain, MasterChef started off in the 1980s, and there was a chap, an American actually, called Lloyd Grossman. He was one of these Americans who had come to Britain and got famous here and wasn't known in America. You know, one of those weird ones. But he presented MasterChef, and it was on. It was very posh, very pretentious. And he did that for years, and then it finished. And then they brought it back. And they made it a lot more, basically the format it is now, and it was a lot more sort of egalitarian and whatnot. And they had two people to host it. One is a chef, an Australian guy called John Turode. And the other guy was a guy by the name of Greg Wallace. And he was, in the early series, he was billed as a top greengrocer. right, who supplied to many of the bits. So he knew ingredients because he supplied to a lot of the top restaurants. As the series got more popular, Greg underwent a bit of a turn in terms of his. So he stopped being described as that and started being referred to on the show as a food writer and well-known critic. And I was like, no, you're a greengrocer. But anyway, it would appear, though, that... and thanks,
is he doing other kinds of green grocery now?
No, unfortunately, I don't believe so. He would, because if he had, he would not have in the Daily Telegraph's My Saturday column, where celebrities will share how they spell their downtime. And if Armando Iannucci and Steve Coogan had written this as a Partridge segment, you would say that's too on the nose, guys. You would actually tell them that it had gone maybe a wee bit into self-parody. So let's start this off. He says, my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. because all these fuckers seem to get, you know, they seem to...
Oh, yeah, I hate it.
All right.
I do more before 8 o'clock.
Get up at 6:30 or 6:15 because my dog needs to shit. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. I get up at 5, but, you know, it's like the Four Yorkshireman sketch. It's like, I would get up at 4 a.m., 20 minutes after I'd gone to bed. So he says that he'll pick up the book he's currently reading and he'll read it for an hour. Right. He'll then get out of his bed to make a coffee, check his emails, and look at how many people have signed up for his health program. And that apparently takes quite a bit of time, as it's 7 a.m. by the time he gets to the gym on a regular basis. Now, listen to this. This is a quote. I work out 5 days at the week. I'm down at the gym half an hour before it opens. They let me in earlier so I have a swim and sauna by myself. Alan Partridge going into the Tandy store. Then I'll review my to-do list while working.
I'm just going to point, the towel boys there jerk off into everything that they hand him.
At what point in the story does he start shoving one of Gwyneth Paltrow's goop eggs up his arse?
We are coming, right? Okay. Then I'll review my to-do list while walking on a treadmill, just walking, no sweating. I aim for 50,000 steps a week. I'm now 12 stone, having lost 5 stone, and I have less than 18% body fat and a six-pack, but I have a belly that bloats. I guess we all have our imperfections. Jesus. That humble brag is right up there with, I have a fat back.
This is the bit, right?
He said, I will then meet my personal assistant, Helen, at the local Harvester, which is a chain restaurant, at 10:30 a.m. He says, people are surprised to see me dining in the budget restaurant chain due to his role as a food critic, but they do grilled chicken, there's a salad bar, and I've never been disappointed. It's all about expectation when it comes to food. I've regularly been disappointed in Michelin star restaurants around Europe, but never in a Harvester. What he didn't mention, incidentally, in this piece, is that Greg Wallace is an ambassador for...
I was waiting for the ad.
Yep.
But that's at 10:30 where he has his grilled chicken. He then goes home for lunch at 12. Wouldn't have thought he would have been hungry.
Just having two lunches now.
It's about smaller meals throughout the day.
He said,
I think I know where the bloat comes from.
Right, exactly.
He said his wife will have dinner, have lunch ready on the table. Another quote. And then comes...
His wife doesn't know about Helen the PA. I don't.
His wife is glad he's out the fucking house. But
right, exactly. If all I have to do is put a ham sandwich on the table at noon, fine.
It then gets a bit frightening and tragic. Where he says at 1:30 he'll spend a bit of time with his 4-year-old son Sid, who is non-verbal autistic. It's obviously very sad. Pottering in
this
the garden.
This kid's faking it. Just
pottering in the garden.
Dad's coming.
Get this. I'm a much better father now that I'm older, although another child isn't something I would have chosen at my age. I was always very honest with Anna, but it's what she wanted, and I love her. I just requested two things, that we had help in the house, so her mum moved in, and secondly, that we had at least 1 week a year where we holidayed just the two of us. So after telling his disabled son that he didn't want him,
yep,
and yeah, in fact, would only do it if his... if his mother-in-law granny came to look after him. Mm-hmm. Now, he plays with his son in the garden with the dogs for an hour. He then says, I'm an amateur historian, so at 3 p.m. Yes. I will go,
there we go,
to spend,
this guy,
to spend 2 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say, amateur historian means I've read Mein Kampf twice.
No, it gets worse. At 3 p.m., I go off to spend 2 hours by myself in my home office playing Total War Saga, Thrones of Britannia.
Beautiful.
Right. Now, this, incidentally, for those of you keeping score, one, if you're a historian, playing a historical computer game doesn't count. Secondly, he's now just said he plays twice as long with his computer than he plays with his non-verbal 4-year-old autistic son, who, yep, you'll recall, he didn't want, and has now told the world that he didn't want.
That's all right. The kid can't hear or they're understanding.
Exactly. Yeah, the non-verbal. Yeah.
Then he goes to bed at 8 o'clock. And although he'll usually watch a movie with his wife in bed...
Wait, so no. That means he's been playing on the computer for 5 hours, not...
Right.
It sounds like anything to avoid spending time with his son.
Was it? Yeah, that's it.
Or it, as he refers him to.
Fuck.
It's just got everything. He's in a harvester. I'm sure he brings a big plate. Right, he's there with his put upon PA. He does that fucking thing of getting up at 5 a.m. He pretends he only eats grilled chicken. He humble brags about his fitness routine with no sense of irony. He broadcasts to the world that he didn't want a kid, and he has one that he will grudgingly spend an hour with.
And he schedules it 1 hour a day.
He schedules 1 hour with his son, but that then can free him up to go and play his computer. And
at what point does he make money? At what point does he actually do a job?
Oh, this is his
by going to the harvester.
Right, but all I would say is, Helen, if you're listening, why the fuck did you allow this to go out?
I don't
if
know.
You're his PA?
Oh, fuck.
I love the fact that someone, it's not only that someone would do that, right, which is great. It's the fact that there are people out there like Greg Wallace who would put that out and think, this, not people will like me after this. That's not what they're after. It's people will be impressed by this.
Yes.
Hire me. That's what that's what I think is marvelous about this. It's, he's not after you to like him and completely doesn't understand that you will read this and think he's an absolute fucking arsepiece.
The sign was there, Greg with two G's. It was all there for us. All there.
Well, I just... but honestly, how good is I have a six pack, but a tendency to bloat.
Right. Yeah.
Well, 18% body fat. That doesn't seem very low.
Right.
Well,
to be fair, when he described he has a six pack and a tendency to bloat, that was me every Saturday in Gananoque.
The other thing is he showed a picture, because of course he did, of his washboard stomach. He's paid for those fucking implants. You know, those stomach implants. Yeah. He is fucking paid for those. But just, it's got everything. It's got vanity, the complete and utter lack of self-awareness.
Right.
The Nazis.
Genuine belief that people would read that and find it aspirational rather than just the most tragic fucking thing. Basically, by the way, see, if I was reading that, I would be phoning social services.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, by the way, there's this guy that's spending
Samaritan's
time,
round or something.
I did not realize that I was an amateur football strategist.
Yes.
By that, I mean, I play FIFA 11 and brought my team to the Champions League through my managerial nous. So
I would consider myself an amateur historian in that I read history voraciously and take courses and online courses.
Yeah.
And
stuff, right? Yes.
And I would consider.
See, I still don't even do that. I just like history.
I do not even consider if I played Call of Duty World War II. Would make me an amateur historian.
Just walking into the bedroom, I showed the Jerry's a thing or two tonight, sweetheart.
After my 5 hours on it. And then if we do have to get... Now, I sleep, as listeners might know. I go to bed late because most often at nights I'm working until about 10. But even so, I need a few hours to relax. But I get up at 12:30, right? Most days I get up at 12:30. See this fucking bollocks about, well, I'm up at 5 while all of you are asleep. Well, in that case, you dickhead, I'm up at fucking 3 when you're sleeping.
Yeah, that's
it.
Who's the funny now?
It's the dumbest thing, because there's so many of these people, right, who came up like through university in the early part of their career, like us, right? Mm-hmm. There were people that stayed up till 4 a.m. because that's just how their body works.
It was life, yeah.
But now, to show off to all their other people who would happily produce a column like this, they do that, like, I'm in bed at 8 o'clock. Okay, I don't get, so what?
Good for you.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Couldn't care less.
Some nights I go to bed at 8 o'clock too. It's because I'm fucking tired and I just want to go to bed. It doesn't fucking matter.
My granddad used to get up at 4 in the morning, right? He would go for a nap around about midday, and he would go to his bed about 7. And that was because he was very, very drunk by that time. My granddad was the happiest fucking guy you've ever met, right? He loved
because he got up at 4 in the morning.
Yes.
He
got up at 4 in the morning. He would come up, actually, he would put me and my sister, he would come up to, they stayed at the bottom of the street, and he would get us ready for school. And then once we were ready and going to the bus, he would crack open a can, and that would be his day. And he would sit watching the racing, drinking cans of export, have a nap at 12, get up in the early evening, watch a bit of telly. He didn't care what was on. He was blazing drunk and go to bed. And he died a happy fucking man. And I would much rather spend an hour in the company of a man like that than with this dickhead.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the car ride?
Oh, God, yeah.
With that.
One of these people who tells you all about himself and doesn't read your facial tics.
Right.
To realize that you're thinking, this guy is a complete and utter wanker.
Michael Beale.
Yeah. I have a comedy based anecdote around this very type of person. This wasn't me. It came directly from the guy that was in the car with this guy. And for those that don't know, when you're doing road gigs, the only thing you have in common with a lot of the people that you work with is that you're in the car driving 4 hours to get to where you need to be. And this guy got in. He was like a younger comic starting out, and there's this established headline. I won't mention his name because sometimes I have to work with this guy. And as they're driving up, the older, more established comic, he's done a lot of festivals, been on TV. He says, "Hey,
have a $40 million contract with Netflix."
He does not. He does
okay,
he's, not yet.
He's no. He's Canadian famous.
Oh, all right.
So he got paid $5,000 for a Comedy Now at some point. You know,
okay,
and, right. Which is being played in perpetuity when they're not doing Big Bang Theory.
Shane, he must be called Gordy.
Oh, you're.
I'm getting dangerously close, aren't I? Yeah.
I cannot confirm nor deny. Yeah, so they're trying to kill time, and the guy goes, "Hey, do you want to hear something?" He says it to the younger comic, goes, "Yes." And he puts in his own comedy album.
Yes.
And plays it for the guy unironically. And just, you know, when the other guy is trying to say, "Hey, that's pretty cool," he goes, "Shh, just listen. Yeah. Just listen." So then they pull over for gas in a small town gas station, and the posters are on the wall for the comedy show.
Yeah.
And they're paying for gas. They're both kind of in the store, and the cashier goes, "Hey, what brings you guys out here?" And the younger guy goes, "We're the comics at that show." He goes, "Oh, you're the comics. That's gonna be awesome." It's like, "I hope you're not. I hope you guys are better than the last time that we had comedy there. That guy was fucking horrible. Guess who was on that show? The guy."
Yeah. He gets
in the car, starts it, ejects his CD, places it down, and drives in silence to the gig.
I once read a thing with, are you guys, I'm never sure how big they are over there, but are you aware of the very limp Mancunian ersatz soul band Simply Red?
Yes. Of course.
Oh, right. So they've.
Yeah. I would have bought their albums, but money's too tight to mention.
Hey, I wouldn't have bought their albums due to my functioning ears, right? I will admit, by the way, that Mick Hucknall, the frontman, is a brilliant singer. He is, you know, he does have an astonishing range of voice. It's not my cup of tea, and the music is so bland that if you covered it in hot water, it would be a new flavor of instant noodle.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'm not a fan, but a girl that I went to university with was what you might consider a looker, right? I mean, she really was. She was stunning. And she ended up working in the music industry. Now, anyone who's worked in the music industry will tell you it's not that glamorous, right? I'm sure you've had some exposure to this, Todd, that it's great if you're a star, but then everyone else is treated like a piece of shit on the shoe. Now, she would do a bit better in it. She worked as a record plugger. Back in the day, that was, you know, you had to go to radio stations and persuade them to play the...
Yeah, basically.
But she was at a party. There was obviously lots of parties. And she was introduced to the aforementioned Simply Red frontman, Mick Hucknall, who was a bit of a swordsman, right? And well known for it. And she goes back to his apartment in Manchester. And she said, you know, it was stunning. It was like a rooftop and looked over the city. And he says, I'll fix us some drinks and I'll put some music on. He puts on his own album. And then during the unpleasantness, the in flagrante moment, would stop and say, listen to this bit, it's so great. And she told me this story. I burst out laughing. She went, is that what a wanker? And I went, yes. But I do think that's quite cool because I would do that.
I'm thinking of this guy doing it like Alfred Molina in Boogie Nights, open bathrobe. You know, now this is where the bam, 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 bam comes. It's like,
The thing about it is that there's a great song by Art Brut, who are an arty British band, very funny at times as well. And they had a song called "Turn Up the Pump Up the Volume," and it's about. And I have done this, which is why it resonated so much. When you are in that situation with a young lady or a young man, if that's your preference, or another lady, if that's your preference, right? It's all good. Or a trans person or someone who identifies as a cat. It's entire. what you get up to with a consenting adult is none of my business. But
exactly.
You take someone back, and I would... this happened a few times at university, and they'd come in and they would go, wow, you know, you've got a lot of music, because I was a bit of a collector. So yeah, big music fan. Put something on then, and I'd say, do you know this particular band or this act? And they'll go, no, obviously, because I'm much cooler than them. And I'll put this on, I think you'll like it. So you would put it on, and they would start, you know, and you'd start kissing. And I'm thinking, she's not really listening to this. And I sometimes stop and go,
fucking bitch.
How good is it? Look, Hen, no offense. You know, you can concentrate on getting off with me. I'm a fairly average man. You're not going to remember. And trust me, in about 5 minutes when this is over, you're not going to remember it. I am introducing you, though, to music that could change your life.
Yeah.
You know, why are you? Don't worry about me. I'll just do my own thing. You won't even know I'm here, right?
Yep.
But you should be paying attention to that. I urge you to check that song out, folks. It's a brilliant song, and it resonated so much. But there was a bit of me that I have to admit that when I heard that, my respect for Mick Hucknall actually went up a little bit. Because if you are a big star and you've sold millions of records and people are always kissing your ass, why wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but see, but he's look, we've all been around musicians for fucking years. We've all got like 5 or 6 friends like that that have been in and out of bands for the past 25 years who every time, like if you go over their house or you're hanging out or fucking whatever, like, oh, you gotta listen to this. You gotta listen. We just cut a new EP.
Yes.
And fucking what?
Always
you
know, an EP.
Oh my god.
Always an EP.
It's always an EP.
Yes. Never a fucking album. Never a fucking album.
Yeah, the only people still making EPs are your friends' bands. Nobody else does it. That's such a fact, Shane. You're spot on there. Oh, yeah, we're just wanting this new EP. Yeah, I thought you might be. And they'll put it on.
We've got half an 8-track.
The other thing, I remember Mick Jagger talking about this because Keith Richards, at the height of their... Remember when they had the Fallout in the 80s?
Yeah.
And Keith Richards was promoting a solo album. And he was asked about it, and he said, well, we fell out. He goes, one of the times was I was playing Mick, my first solo album, and I went through to the kitchen to get a beer. And when I came through, he was, you know, sitting basically, you know, flicking through a newspaper and, you know, not paying attention. So the guy, the interviewer who had done that interview, subsequently interviewed Jagger, and he said, you know, you interviewed. And we've all been in this position as well. And Jagger said, yeah, but, you know, it's 45 minutes for an album. It's a long time to just sit there in admiration. He said, do you listen to music like that? And the interviewer had to concede, no, I don't. But we've all been in that situation, either with a friend's new EP or listen to my new favourite song. And they'll put it on, and you'll listen for about a minute, and then the silence will you, and you'll go, oh, yeah, that, I like that, it's really good. And no, listen! And you have to sit, they make you sit stock still, paying attention to it. And it's true, you don't do that with music.
Hold on, let me play that part again. Hold on.
Mea culpa, I have been that guy when you're steaming drunk and you take control of the stereo and you go, no. This part of the Square Pusher song needs to be paid attention to. You know,
I mean, I've been that guy steaming drunk with a fucking guitar, but
yeah.
My way around that was years ago. We used to have, you know, the guys that get in. This was the mid-90s, remember? And there would be guys, as Shane said, in bands, and you know, they would think they were God's gift. They would end up putting one single out on an independent label and end up working in Burger King. But you knew that this
paying their dues, David.
But while they were doing that, though, they were, generally speaking, actually their parents or their girlfriends were paying their dues, Shane.
Yes. Right.
Fuckers were too busy being a genius. So they would always pick up the fucking acoustic guitar in the corner of a room and start playing Wonderwall.
Mid-90s, right?
So I eventually thought, and I got a way around it, that I got a 12-string guitar. And then when they went in my house to pick it up, it's like tuning a fucking Rubik's Cube.
Yep.
Go, dickhead, there you go, fucking play Wonderwall and that, you prick. And they'd be sitting and it, you know, and
barely play four strings. Here's twice as many as should be there.
Yeah. Here are all the guitar, fucking Dad. Strings.
I know, but he can barely play four of them.
I would deliberately detune it before we had a party so that if anyone picked it up, it sounded horrendous, because to tune it, even if you knew what you were doing and were sober, took about fucking half an hour and you wanted your
voice to live.
It's why the 12-string guitar sounds magnificent and is played on about 7 records, because everybody gets
they're all by the birds.
When they finally get it tuned, it's like, don't touch it! Don't touch it!
It'll go out your air.
It's 12-string guitar is like an avocado, you know? It's like, it's right for about 6 minutes a day at 4 o'clock in the morning when no one's around.
As you say, unless your name is Tom Petty, don't play it. Right, it's made for you.
The song Summer of 69 would be so different if he bought his first 12-string down at the Five and Dime. Bought my first real 12-string, bought it at the Five and Dime. Nothing happened after that.
End of song.
Tuning it all the time.
There's also a great Dylan story with how to deal with people like Greg Wallace and these assholes that we've discussed in bands, right? Mm-hmm. You know The Last Waltz? Of course.
Oh, yes.
Of course, yeah.
Right. Ronnie Wood, I saw tell a story one time in an interview, and it cracks me up. It was for that, remember the Dylan 30th? I don't know if you guys remember the concert, 92, Madison Square. Yeah. Well, he was being interviewed before it, and he said, we were at the Last Waltz. He said, and Neil Diamond was playing. And he said, and none of us could understand what the fuck Neil Diamond was doing there, right?
Right.
You know, he said, all these rock and roll stars and Neil Diamond. He says, and Neil Diamond... And this is Ronnie Woodsworth, famously says, Neil Diamond's well known for being an arsehole, right? So He said, so basically, though, he does his set. He said, and to be fair, it went down well. And he's coming off stage and he's walking by Bob Dylan. I said, Bob fucking Dylan, right? He's walking by Bob Dylan. And Neil Diamond goes to him, oh, man, I wouldn't want to have to follow that, Bob. I was so, so good out there. You're going to have trouble. And he said, Dylan just looked at him contemptuously and went, yeah, I could go out and fall asleep, I suppose. And just walked on and then, of course, fucking killed it because he was Bob Dylan, right? And it was
right. Yeah.
Right. And you know, the people were there to see him. But imagine being such an arrogant asshole that you walk up to Bob Dylan and tell him how great you are.
Yeah.
Even we
had one of them die. Nobody should have to die of stomach cancer or whatever. That's bad. Toby Keith.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, who famously got into it with Chris Christopherson.
Yes.
To lay off the left wing shit tonight.
Right,
Chris.
Right. My favorite line out of that exchange is when he says, did you ever serve your country? Toby Keith goes, what? Goes, you heard my question. You just fucking hate the answer. It's like, that is right up there with fucking Samuel Jackson's. I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing. Like, that is fucking slamming. I do have a celebrity exchange.
Todd, save it. Break. Quick. Yep, okay, do quick it. Break. Right back. Second half. Todd, celebrity fucking half.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're oh, you know, it usually doesn't happen halfway through the show.
Is it halfway through the show?
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Okay, let me try that again. All right, we're back for part two of the fuck this. Part two of the Crowpod. Oh, I might just leave it in now. The hell?
Yeah,
of course you will.
Don't check out our friends at famousedward.co.uk, bluebrewmart.co.uk, and of course our good friend Mark Boyd there, Recovery and Repair, Massage Therapy, and East Kilbride. Todd, I have a question. Who won the first set between you and Who Fuck Lee or whoever the fuck you're playing over there in table tennis? Here.
That was literally me looking up the Toby Keith Chris Christopherson exchange.
God,
that just tells me. By the way, thank you. I have a good microphone. That's good.
Yeah,
there we are.
You should invest, folks. If you need a quiet mouse, get the Logitech M330. It's a great. Also, a great quiet mouse.
And it can also steer.
Hey, also, Logitech, please just give me money.
Yeah, but it can also steer a submersible.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. No chances of you getting back alive, but
no. But that's overrated anyway.
Do the thing where you're able to pay after the voyage.
Yeah. I always think that maybe submersibles will take over from helicopters as the way rich people kill themselves, because it's always been helicopters. Every couple of years, a famous person will die, which is point blank why. I've never really seen the attraction of helicopter travel.
No, they're insanely dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They're built to drop, whereas a plane is built to fly. Think about that, right? Yes. I've been in one once, actually. I've only been in a helicopter once. I took the helicopter tour of the Grand Canyon when I was in Vegas. And, you know, it was cool. We got taken down to into the canyon, and we were able to, you know, sit and eat. And, you know, it's, the Grand Canyon is, see for what is essentially a big hole in the ground. It is pretty impressive.
It's as, a pretty good size hole.
As big holes go, you know, Rover here may not know, but he is... He is creating a hole.
Rainier Volcastle. Upwards, stupid.
Rainier Volcastle had it. But the it was the only time I was in it. And the guy who was doing it, you know, you pay your money in Vegas and they take you. And it's great. They take you down the strip. I mean, it is amazing. We saw the Hoover Dam, all that kind of stuff. But he had a sense of humor because when we got in the helicopter, they give you the, you know, the ear protectors. But also their headphones, so you can hear the pilot as he describes, right? But they were playing music before we started, and the song he was playing as we got into this was Die Young by Kesha. Didn't do a lot for my confidence in the journey.
No, you know, I'm trying to get, like, I have an aversion to flying in planes, which is, you know, relative safety record. I mean, even compared to, like, automobiles, not too bad, you know?
Right.
But, no, a helicopter is made to kill you. Like, that's that's all it's for. Right. I would never, ever, ever step foot in
one. I wonder if there are those moments, kind of like David's. Like, I was just thinking of, like, if you're in one of the Air Alaska planes and you're watching a movie in front of you, and then, you know, Michael Caine gets to the line, "I only tells you to blow the fucking doors off," and then your window just flutters away because there's not enough bolts in it.
Yep. Your body gets ripped in half as you get sucked out of the plane.
They do say that life imitates art.
Yes.
somewhere.
I would just as we mentioned before the break, I just want to get this out of the way. The an actual very good celebrity exchange, not very different from Toby Keith, Chris Christopherson. This is this actually made me like this guy a little bit more. And sadly, it takes place at the funeral of Phil Hartman. And all the SNL alumni are obviously there, and they're coming in. And Mike Myers is talking to some of these guys, and he hadn't heard how Phil Hartman passed away. And this guy goes, "Oh, it's a horrible story. His wife went nuts and shot him, and then turned the gun on herself and shot herself." Yeah. And at that point, John Lovitz leans in and goes, "Oh, you're making it sound worse than it was." And now I have never loved John Lovitz more.
That is genuinely funny. You know, to be fair, that is genuinely funny. Oh, speaking of which, David's 90s, you need to get me a bumper for this. David's 90s film reviews.
Here we go.
Right, I've got from
David 90s film reviews.
Come up with some music for it, right? Yeah. This week I watched the 1992 adaptation of the John Grisham novel The Firm, starring Tom Cruise,
Wilfred Brimley.
Yes.
When he's not coaching the Chiefs, he's managing a law firm.
I think that subconsciously that's what maybe prompted me to this. I've got to be honest. It is very good, right? It's very, very well acted, and it's very well told and quite pacey, and it is an enjoyable movie. But one thing was troubling me, so I went back to check. Now, just before this came out, Tom Cruise had done another lawyerly movie. He had done
The Pelican Brief.
No, Julia Roberts. He had done A Few Good Men.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You can't handle the truth.
It's a fantastic movie.
Although it absolutely is. Although, as Sideshow Bob put it, you can't handle the truth. I deride your truth. I deride your no truth handlers, you. That's exactly what he should have said back. I deride your truth handling ability. But I watched it back and I was thinking, right, this is probably a really good insight into Tom Cruise. In A Few Good Men, he is playing a hard-bitten trial lawyer who is chosen because he has a record going back years of pleading cases down. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point that why he's chosen for this assignment. But then a few months later...
Wait, before you get into this further. Spoiler alert.
Sorry, yeah, spoiler alert for a movie that...
You're giving this shit away, David. Come on.
That might happen in David's film reviews, right? We need to see if you can get that in on the bumper. But then a few months later, and I checked, they did come out, it was literally a couple of months, he's then playing Mitch McConnell, a brand new lawyer who has just graduated from and is going into his first job. And it's the thing about Tom Cruise, even to this day, that he seems to be able to play anything from age 11 to 78.
Yes.
Maybe there's something in Scientology that they keep him in a closet box.
Cryogenic pod.
No, he's definitely not gay.
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Do you want to get shut down? Fuck the NFL, Super Bowl. Do not get Scientology on your ass.
Nope, not me. Great bunch of lads.
It's okay, because we got the Swifties at our back, because we all love Taylor Swift.
That would be a fight. That would be a fight worth watching.
Scientology
against Swifties. We will be in bunkers telling our grandchildren about the great fight that happened on the surface world. 100%. You
know? That would be like the fucking end of days. That there would be four guys on horses riding about the place on that one. But yeah, it is a good movie.
Pestilence would turn to drought and just go, you know, the soundtrack's good for this one.
Yeah, but Simply Red. I've got a story about that. it's a very good movie, I have to admit. And, you know, it's got Ed Harris is in it as well.
Yes.
Yep, absolutely.
Have a bad movie with Ed Harris.
And Gene Hackman, who is just great, because he's clearly, there are movies, and the reason I brought this up is Gene Hackman's birthday last week, right?
Yeah, 91.
Yep, 91. And Gene Hackman, there are films, in fact, all of them after, I think, really, him playing Popeye Doyle, I think was the last time he took a role seriously. And he is just always having so much fun and not giving a fuck what's going on around it.
Right.
And there's a brilliant story about one of his movies. There was a young actor was in it, and he approached him, and he said, you know, I'm worrying about how to play this particular part. And Gene Hackman went, all right, okay. He said, what's bothering you about it? So the guy goes into the spiel, and eventually, after a couple of minutes, he stops him. Gene Hackman stops him, and he said, listen, this movie is rubbish. This is a terrible, terrible movie. But we're getting paid. So don't worry about it. Just go and do whatever you were going to do. It doesn't matter. No one will ever see this.
I haven't even told my wife I'm doing it.
We're getting paid far more than this movie is worth. It's a terrible script. The director doesn't have a clue what he's doing. Don't panic. And I just thought, you have to fucking love that attitude.
Right. By the way, I think I mentioned this previously on the show. He was a flip of the coin away from being Mr. Brady on the Brady Bunch TV show.
I something I thought about doing like 20 times before and never have was the celebrity birthday bit. But the problem is now if you go to one of these websites, you got to scroll through like 20 TikTok or YouTube people to get to, you know, like people that actually do things that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
But among them, to Chris Rock, Charles Dickens, and going down, James Spader.
Hello.
Good day.
Good day.
James Spader. This one describes as Susie Eddie Izzard. So there we go.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he'd fully...
I don't know. I'm just looking at this website.
No, okay. He must have. Sorry. Yeah. I really don't want to get in trouble. Did you hear the story about Newcastle United?
No, what happened? What happened to Newcastle? What have they done now?
Newcastle United wrote to a fan telling her that they were revoking her season ticket because she had posted on her Facebook feed that she didn't believe that trans women were women.
I'm sorry. You're owned by these...
Thank you. Yes.
Arabian.
Unbelievable. Women are women.
I would like to hear from the owner of Newcastle United.
Exactly. Yes.
On trans. No, I'm not getting into the trans debate because
But I'll get into the debate about those. You know, again, look, if you are, you know, the oligarch from one of these horrible Middle Eastern countries that's currently like destroying world shipping and whatever the fuck you're up to.
Yep.
Please, if you would like to give £500 million to Rangers, by all means do. I will ignore everything. Doesn't matter.
100%. Todd would have some ethical dilemmas about it. Todd's a raving lefty. You and I sort of play at it, but
Todd's the moral compass here.
Todd's the guy.
I'm the guy that stands behind you with the book and just goes, guys, hang on.
You should look at this here.
Yeah.
I had a friend again when I was at uni who turned vegan, and it wasn't as you know mainstream as it is now. And she did it for the right reasons. She was a vegetarian, and she really didn't, so she thought, I'm gonna try being a vegan, but she had to carry a fucking book with her,
right,
to see what she couldn't eat, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, see, if you need a book to tell you what you should and shouldn't eat, then your diet is too complicated. And eventually she ended up, because her diet eventually ended up being cheese and onion crisps and wine.
Okay, very healthy.
And she eventually had to get her eyesight was failing.
Right? Sure. Yeah, because she had diabetes.
Right. Glaucoma. Yeah.
The doctor had to give her injections of vitamin B, and he was
beautiful.
What's your diet? She went, well, I'm a vegan. He went, not anymore. You're not.
No, you're not. Go have a cheeseburger.
Yeah. You need to eat food.
So here's the thing. Yeah. Okay. So yes, I am. I describe myself. My political stance is pretty much like my penis. It's kind of it leans central left, and my material reflects that. And after one of the shows this weekend, this guy came up. He goes, "So you're a lefty, huh?" I'm like, "Oh, here it comes." He goes, "Yeah, I used to be, but now I'm a righty." It's like I've never heard a conservative ever call themselves a righty. I've never heard that. No. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. And I told him my reasons that, you know, we both hated the same leader of our country. Mine is very different from a lot of them. And he was like, yeah, I really got into the readings about these globalists. And as soon as he said globalist, I'm like, well, here we go. It's like, the ball cap is lined with foil, is it? I see.
Well, you know, I mean, I am... See, this is the thing. Whenever and I've been, you know, accused, using that word correctly, of being one thing or the other by people over the years, and I've kind of come to the conclusion that I am. Is it possible to not be right, left, or even centrist? I am a Davidist, right?
That's
and
true.
My principles and opinions swing with whatever is. I was when I had no money, I was massive on taxing the rich. Right. Now I have a bit more money, I really don't think that's a good idea. Now, I could try and dress that up for you, right? I could try and say, oh, no, well, we need to encourage your growth and these people. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's that I want to keep as much of my money as I can to spend
on. David, both things can be true.
Yeah,
you can have, and it's like, yes, we should, you know, the wealthier should pay more of their share and the poor people should not. That's a fact. However, I'm all about tax deductions and loopholes because those are the rules they put in place. I don't mind playing by the rules. That's fine.
This is one thing that morally, though, it's not morally, but I generally just tell my accountant, just do the simpler tax thing. And the reason I do that is not moral. It's I hate to boast, I hate to go all Greg Wallace, but I've got a really, really nice bottom. Right. Top half is not much to look at, but I have a really, really nice bottom and I couldn't go to prison. They would pass me about like a scud book. It would not.
Than your head, David.
Yes.
Yeah, it's shaved more often. I think that's why.
Oh, no. Actually, I have to say, no, I mean, I've got a nice ass and jeans. Once you see it, I mean.
Once that is unfurled, it's like, look at those two huge kiwis. Look at that.
If you actually see my arse, it is I am very much deserving of the phrase "hairy arse jock." I've got an arse you could lose a badger in. Right.
And a half. It's
it was interesting actually because funny enough, I had this conversation with my stepdaughter, and she said to me, she goes, "Do you shave your chest?" I went, "No, of course I don't." Right, I'm a 46-year-old man from Scotland. Mm-hmm. Right, no. She said, "Have you ever thought about it?" I went, "Nah, I tend to leave body hair where it, you know,
yeah.
It's made the effort to arrive there, and it seems a bit cruel. I shave my face, that's about it, and obviously God's right. Taking care of my my head for me. So I said, but you know, nasal hairs, yes, I'll trim, but that's really about it. And she said, yeah, it's all the guys that I date, she said, they're all, you know, totally hairless. And some girls actually like, you know, hairy masculine men.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, I it's the fashion, I suppose, you know, just to do that. But yeah, young men listening, apparently there's a need that's not being
met
for hairy men out there.
Hey, I got right here. Don't worry.
Yeah, stand out from the crowd.
You can shave your chest, but that chest better be fit and not move when you poke it, right? Yeah, like
you better look like Greg Wallace. Let me
exactly.
Tell you.
Like if I'm shaving my chest, that is like shoveling snow off of a trampoline. It is not great.
But then Greg Wallace would fucking hate me because I make about 15 steps a day, and I am very skinny anyway. So my stomach doesn't bloat, Greg Wallace. Get it right fucking up, you.
Yeah.
And, I the only grilled chicken I would ever eat would be if they had run out of soaked in fat beef.
Just you know, tallow.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, see when people do that. I mean, I've had people in restaurants. You know, it's like I'd like the burger, please, but could you make sure that the fat is removed? No problem at all, sir. And I'll go, could you pour the fat from his burger?
Yeah, please add that to mine.
Before it arrives. Thank
you. Well, look, it was like when I roast chicken, right? I take the fat out of the pan.
Yeah.
And then I use it to make gravy, which I then pour on top of the chicken.
On top of the chicken, as nature intended, right? If we're going to go to the trouble, and I've long reconciled myself, because, you know, it is wrong to kill animals for food. There's no doubt about that. Doesn't stop me doing it, because they're delicious. Right.
Yeah, right? Tastes good.
There are only really three reasons that for animals to exist, I think, right? They should either be magnificent, you know, your lions and tigers and elephants.
Yeah,
moose. They should be cute, your dog, your cat, you know, your domestic animals.
My fish.
Hamsters. Fish.
Yeah. Or they should be delicious.
All right, Richard Gere.
Right. Those are the
what's wrong with a fucking hamster? Not all hamsters need to go up in arts. Okay? Some of them just kind of run around in a wheel, you know. You let them around the house in a little plastic globe where they're running around like American gladiators. It's fun. Yeah. It's
how
fun.
How do you get it up? Like, genuinely, that whole how do you?
I mean, presumably, you just shove
there.
The tube up there and then you let it run in.
Oh, right? A tube, no. Of course. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
You build the intricate hamster housing development throughout your living room, and it just ends in your.
And then it just ends up ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Yeah. Or maybe you swallow one of those running wheels before it arrives, so it's got something to do when it gets up there.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. David, there was you know, to your point here about, well, Davidism in my case, you know, I have Shanus beliefs, right? Fairly, very, very extremely left wing, as we've dealt with on the show over the years. Right. And although, again, you know, I've winded down. I really don't care to talk to people about this shit anymore because this country just continues to descend into fascism. So what are you going to do? Right. I don't want to get shot for the shit I say anymore. So,
right.
But, you know, to the food, to the item number three in your animal list are the delicious animals.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I know industrial farming is killing the world.
Yep.
But I fucking love cheeseburgers.
Sure.
So I don't give a shit. Because I'm here, what, 75? 85 years. I mean, if I'm doing good at this point, like 85 years, right? I've not treated my body well. You know, I'm probably halfway home.
Yeah.
I got 40 more years to eat cheeseburgers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it.
By the way, the cheeseburger is the biggest fuck you to the cow we've ever come up with. It's like, oh, yeah. Hey, yeah. Thank you for the cheese.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. But then, again, it's just ringing the, you know, the a phrase that we use over here about cows is it's basically just a stew in a jacket. and that sort of, but you know, it's one of these. I mean, obviously, someone who's a veggie once said to me, "Well, would you eat your dog?" And I went, "No, of course not. That's disgusting."
No, I like my dog. Yeah. Said, I don't know the cow that I just ate.
Yeah, exactly. She said, I remember years ago, and without getting it too dark, when you do AA, you go through a thing called the 12 steps, as people know, right? Yes. And the idea is that it just centers you and makes you a lot more humble and all the rest of it, right? So a guy said to me, he said, okay, so one of the tests that we do before we start this is I will give you a suitcase and in it is £10 million, but someone you don't know will die. That's
the payment. And somebody said, I don't know dies every fucking day.
He said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm taking the money. He went, right, that's what we need to work on. And when we finished it, he asked me, and I said, I'm still taking the money. And he's like, well, we've got so far.
At least you're not drinking anymore.
Yeah, you're not.
Right, yeah.
I'll take that. But, you know, we're a selfish society these days.
See, but again, you know, at the same time, look, I'm going to eat the shit, but yeah, I will complain about the fact that like states in my country are just now suffocating people to death because they can't buy their drugs to kill them with. Like that's what, you know, that's where we're at as a society. You know, David, I started watching, I don't know if you have caught, there's a show called Louder Milk. Have you watched this with Ron Livingston?
No,
but I've heard it's good.
Netflix. It is very good. Yeah. And for me and you, David, specifically, you know, you're good at the whole dealing with alcohol thing. Like me, every couple of weeks, I just decide to get fucking pissed drunk still. Mm-hmm. But very good program that covers all that, and also very, very, very funny. Except the only it gives too prominent a role of the one comic who had the puppets. What's his name?
Oh, Jeff Dunham.
Yeah, he's in there. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, but he's not doing the puppet thing. Yeah, I think it's Jeff Dunham. I don't know. Yeah. It's him or some, yeah. Yeah. But no, very, very good show. And apparently it just got picked up for two more series. Yeah. So,
he was kicking it, but I do like Ron Livingston because obviously. Yeah.
Office Space.
Office Space, Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers. He was also in Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
Pinkerton guy.
There's nothing he's bad in. Absolutely.
No. Office Space, though, is so fucking. Anyone who worked in an office round about that time will just identify so much with that movie. So if you could just come in at the weekend, that would be great. He's underrated, actually, Gary Coleman. I think he is an underrated. He was brilliant in The West Wing. He was brilliant in Midnight Caller. He was brilliant in American Gothic. He's just, he can do pretty much anything.
Great voice actor.
He's so great in this. So, yeah, if you could. And
fuck Lambert.
Yeah,
you might know the name of the guy. I don't. You know the actor. He was in The West Wing as well. The one who plays the wee guy with the stapler.
Stephen.
Stephen
Root, and he is. Speaking of guys that are fucking amazing in everything,
and can do anything.
He is one of those guys that when you watch a TV show or a movie and go, I don't know about this. I'm kind of 50-50. As soon as you see him walk in, you're just like, we're in good hands. The pilot is no longer drunk. You know?
See, when he came up with a voice for that, I mean, just fucking, you've taken my tippler. That might be I mean, just it. But
the ratio of people to cake.
I love Michael Bolton. In it.
But
see, at one point, I watched it a few weeks ago. See, at one point,
you see Lowlander. The fuck does that mean?
Does that mean?
Yeah, this plan seems familiar. Yes, it's essentially the plan from Superman 3.
Three.
And of course, anyone who's ever dealt with a fucking printer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's ever dealt with a fucking printer has had ambitions to do that to an office printer.
What is so confusing about my name? Na-i-na-na-jar. Na-i-na-na-jar. It's easy.
Hey, Peter, turn on Channel 9. Nah. You're about to do the best exam.
Why don't you change your name to Mike Bolton? Right. Oh, fuck, am I in my name first? He should change his name. Yeah.
David, per our previous conversation, watch a cornhole.
It's just full of great characters, and it's got Jennifer Aniston at her hottest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. What? And
correct.
I saw an interview with the director about it, and he said, if there's one thing I've achieved in the world, it's that TGI Fridays stopped making their employees wear flair.
Yeah.
Right. This, yeah.
After this movie, they stopped it. He said, so if there's one thing I've achieved in my life, it's remember that great Onion headline? Hi, welcome to TGI Fridays. I'll be your waitress and annoy fuck out of you.
Right.
Right. One of my favorite choose your own adventure memes is 14 beers at Chili's.
Yeah.
TGI Fridays in Glasgow, they used to do a 2-for-1 cocktail hour back when happy hours were legal over here. So at uni, we used to go down there a lot and get absolutely fucking bladdered. And then somebody in the corner of the room would always try the very big steak. You know, the...
Right.
Yeah.
The old 86er.
If you finish this, it's free, one of those ones. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I remember saying to one of my mates, I was like, look, you've drank fucking 10 cocktails in the last hour, right? We're wasted. You're not going to be like, fucking bring it, right? And they bring this gargantuan, badly cooked, because they don't want you to finish it, badly cooked steak, right? Deliberately so. And to be fair, he got about a third of the way into it. And you know that way, when you know that someone is going to barf,
yes,
and they are not making the toilet. And his came out like the fucking Exorcist. And it was just, it was almost like an arc of spew. And gorgeous. The whole world slowed down in slow motion. And we were banned from TGI Fridays in Glasgow from then on. And like, you fucking fanny, we told you. We fucking told you. Right. But it's like, it's the same way after you've had like 8 beers and you go, now is the time to bust out the whiskey. No,
correct.
It's not.
Yes.
Well, it's always the drunk fallacy. I was like, oh, I mixed, you know, vodka and tequila or whatever. It's like, no. You had 18 fucking cocktails in 3 hours.
You're going through every one of those rhymes. It's like, wine on beer, have no fear. Beer, yeah.
If you drink a case of beer before drinking the fifth of whiskey, you will never be sicker.
I once drank 3 bottles of wine and then had several beers after it, and I did not feel fine the next day. Right. Let me assure you that rhyme was put to the test and it failed. It's right up there with a watch kettle never boils. Yes, it does. Right. And similarly, if you drink several bottles of wine and then go, I'll move to beer because then I'll be all right tomorrow, it's not true. Similarly, you know how they always say if you spill red wine, you should pour white wine on it?
No.
Right. That's the thing over here. It's if you
I thought it was just soda water.
Yeah, it's club soda.
Right.
Well, ice cold.
If you spill white wine, actually, is reasonably effective.
I mean, if I spill red wine down my throat, I will chase it with white wine.
Well, I was going to say, if you didn't do that...
Oh, got to get that stain out. Don't want my pancreas red.
It neutralizes it on a couch. It does not neutralize it in your liver.
Right.
No. Yes.
Nor does it turn into rosy, which was another theory of that didn't pan out as a theory. That's not how they make rosé.
Bachelorette parties everywhere have learned that the hard way.
And they all descend on comedy shows.
It is not doable, frankly.
I wanted to not we're not jumping in here, but it's Black History Month. I think it's important to recognize. Of course, marked by the passage of the, you know, the 13th Amendment on February 1st, after the Civil War and a bunch of other shit. Yeah, you know, the fact that, of course, Black History Month more recognized for all the horrible things that have happened to Black people during the month of February instead of just that. But the Onion had a quiz. Let's see how many answers you got. David, when is Black History Month? A pretty easy one.
This month.
Got to be sometime around now or no one would be talking about it.
Yeah. Well done, me.
Let's see here. What does MLK stand for, Todd?
Martin Luther King.
No, MLK is a code assigned by the International Airport Association to the airport in Malta, Montana. let's try it. David, which Supreme Court case invalidated laws banning interracial marriage?
We've
actually talked about this one before.
I think it's State versus Brown. What is that?
You think of Brown v. Board of Education. Actually, the answer is it doesn't matter because it'll soon be overturned.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Actually, the only black guy on the court working actively to overturn Loving v.
Exactly. Right now. Exactly.
Yeah. Married to a white woman, by the way. But
Of course. Right. Yeah. Who is completely sane?
And is definitely not going to jail for her partner January 6th.
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Nope. No. Let's see here. Todd, who was the first African-American Nobel Peace Prize winner?
The first African-American Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Yeah.
Peace Prize. Oh, would it be Barack Obama?
Answer. You can't just guess Barack Obama for every answer.
Okay, damn it. Can I go back and change my MLK answer to Barack Obama, please?
David, in 1997, researchers at Johns Hopkins University discovered a man who did not have a single racist bone in his body. Who was it?
Piltdown man.
49-year-old Scott Bettino of Salinas, Kansas, who is not racist, but simply believes stereotypes are based on reality.
Right. By the way, every non-racist bone in his body is also white.
Yeah.
So
I do like, not racist, but you always know that there's something good coming after that.
Fuck.
Yeah. I've got a lot of black friends. So.
Right, exactly.
I like I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston.
Big Tina Turner supporters on this show. It's all right.
Totally. So, put that in your pipe and smoke it, eh?
Mm-hmm. just once, I talk about this on stage, just once I'd like to be in a conversation with a black person where the white guilt in me doesn't overwhelm every sense in my body and go, I listen to a lot of hip-hop, so I think I understand you people. And then
it's when you meet you show your liberal credentials, you meet a black person on the bus and you say, what are you up to? And you say, well, I'm going here. And you're like, well, we're all going to this club or whatever. Come with us. And no, you're fucking coming with us.
Right, exactly.
to wear like a on your sleeve. And to,
he becomes your wokeness meat shield that you just bring in.
It's a bit like when people say that I'm not a very nice guy and I show them a photo of me being great with my nephews and say, right. look, how bad can I be? Look how happy they are.
Exactly. And my accountant is Jewish. What are you talking about?
Yeah. They are sensible because they were the accountancy firm who refused to sign off the SMPs and then ditched them as a client. So they are quite sensible, it's fair to say.
Oh, yeah. Let's get the predictions for the big game this weekend. Todd, who you got as we take on Air United in the Scottish Cup?
Okay.
I thought you were asking about the Grand Owl.
That's right. Well, as I'm watching the big game, I am going to be looking for in-game parlays against Air United and Rangers, and I think the team in blue will come out victorious.
Todd's bi-weekly habit of pissing money off the wall, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, no, my Livingston 3-0 came in, so that was good. I was happy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I think that, Rangers win 3 or 4-0, but I'm sorry, Shane, but I think the Chiefs win in a squeaker.
I think it's going to look a lot like the last time. So
I think a narrow Chiefs victory because the two absolutely astonishingly good players that they have are playing absolutely astonishingly well.
And our obviously coach doesn't know how to use our best astonishingly good player.
And obviously because the deep state will be at work. So
exactly.
Will not be allowed to win the Super Bowl. So I think, I'm very much looking forward to it. Obviously, it's a bit of a late one for us over here.
It's a 5 to, what is that, 11:30? Right for you,
yeah,
guys.
11 yeah. But then with the extra half time and stuff, you're looking at three.
I mean, they have moved up the kickoffs owing to like the Western Europe, because you know they used to kick off at like 7 o'clock for us here central, it'd be
I mean, it's all good, it doesn't matter anyway. I happily stay up because it is, you know, two great teams, and that's asked for. And
it's the two best teams in the league, I would say.
Listeners may want to know, I got my Vikings helmet. It is uncomfortable. Trainers, right?
Not a euphemism.
Nope. The amount of fun I've had.
He's got his purple helmet out again.
Robbing purple helmet. It's very horny.
The amount of fun I've had asking people if they'd like to see my big purple helmet this week has been tremendous. Yes. But I will say this, I got some funny looks at Ibrox. You know, you would think anybody else.
Wearing it in the gantry?
Yeah. Guys, like, I said, what you got on? I said, a hat? You've got one on. A hat? And he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, well, I don't, you know, you're wearing a hat. I'm wearing a hat.
I realized I was watching because I, you know, it was late night and I was trying to catch up on some shit and I just throw whatever on. And like Absolutely Fabulous came up on the shuffle somewhere.
Right.
Jennifer Saunders always wears a Minnesota Vikings cap when she's working out.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Just, cut to like 3 weeks from now and like, you know, David showing up to Ibrox in a bathysphere, you know.
That was like when I was contemplating buying the Stormtrooper suit, because you can get real ones from the company that makes them for the movies. And I was contemplating buying it, and Sally said to me, look, when would you wear it? I was like, when wouldn't I wear it? More like, I'd be sitting there at the press conference saying, Phil, oh, can you not hear me? Right, I'll take this off for a moment. I wear my Stormtrooper suit pretty constantly.
Yeah, but what if Phil walked, see, what break it, if he walked up, he's like, aren't you a little short for a Stormtrooper? And he'd be like, oh my God.
Stay here and die, you stuck up bitch. One of my the two favorite lines in The Family Guy are, stay here and die, you stuck up bitch. And then in the second, the Empire one, where Peter is about to be frozen, and Lois Leia says to him, I love you. And he looks up and goes, fuck off. And the one other where he's like, she says, you nerf herder, which is
great. Yeah, nerf herder.
And he punches her and says, that is our word. You can't use that word. And later on, him and Brian is chewy. Are sitting there, and Brian goes, yeah, you my nerf herder. You know, you my nerf herder.
Oh, my God.
Go 49ers. We're going to some friend's house and cooking a lot of food and drinking and watching football. So that's what the Super Bowl is for. That's
absolutely
it.
Yes. My wife was shocked to discover this week that we're watching the Super Bowl this weekend.
Yeah. Well, that was because, like, you know, friends had gotten a hold of us. Would you like to come over for dinner on Sunday? I was like, well, actually, I can kill two birds with one stone here. If we can get together for our dinner. And also, I can not participate for about 3.5 hours. So it's
there's absolutely no way that plan doesn't. That's a foolproof plan, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's great. Well, and you know, the only thing I will say I've got going for me, Good Luck Charm Hugh is coming down. So he worked for Tennessee football this year. So
Sheffield Chuggy.
Yep, we need you, buddy.
Big Sheffield Chug. we actually, it's been so weird going to Ibrox recently that one, it's fun. And two, we win all the time. And you can see us that we're all sort of like, you know, like survivors emerging into the light, and we're doing the rubbing the eyes thing, you know, and blinking. And it's very like that. We've got two games coming up. No disrespect to the opponents, Air United and Ross County. We're expecting to win, and to win by a few. And it's such a strange position to find ourselves in.
Yeah, it's nice again. It's right? You know,
all good.
I just really, I want to get back for the generation that has had to grow up in this era. I would love nothing better for them than to have have an era like the 90s were for us. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
I because I get to experience it again, but they get mm-hmm. to do it for the first time.
Exactly.
And that's very nice. It's so a good feeling.
So long as they're willing to accept that us old guys will still stand there and go, you know, as we take the cigar out the corner of the mouth and go, well, kid, still not as good as the 90s. So long as they accept that, then...
So George Albert's out here.
Right.
That's all I know. Onion headlines. That shit adds up quickly. Nation's uncle's report.
Nice. I am going with from the Reductress. Wow. Man's preferences sound more like demands. But this one is just delightful. From the Onion, pigeon delighted in eating chicken wing like sophisticated German cannibal.
I've got a couple. First of all, introverted cowboy struggling to round up posse.
Beautiful.
And this one, Gen Z announces Julie Andrews is problematic but refuses to explain why.
Honorable mention to man with cockatiel on shoulder gives knowing nod to man with iguana on shoulder.
That is so. Do either of you guys read the comic strips of Nathan Pyle?
Nathan Pyle. No, I don't know this.
For a list of it, go and check it out. But it's about aliens who have come to Earth, and it's it's a way he uses language. So for instance, they're eating a pizza, and he said, "Be careful! This is extremely hot and will singe your flavor muscle." So the wee guy eats a bite, and says, "It did singe my flavor muscle," and he replies, "The prophecy has come true."
There was one. Biden gives Americans nuclear launch codes in case anything ever happens to them. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because everybody could have guessed the launch code because it was just 80s. Famously, for about 35 years, it was just mm-hmm. 80s.
What happened to the nuclear football? I thought you were supposed to rip it out someone's stomach.
It's actually in Las Vegas. It's in Las Vegas this week.
That was the thing. It was the nuclear, the guy who had it, that it was implanted in his stomach so that you had to rip it out quickly and kill him so that the president would be aware mm-hmm. of what he was doing and that you know, it would be right up close and personal. I quite prefer the British way, as explained in Yes, Prime Minister, where he said, "This is it, the button." And he goes, "Oh, so I just press this?" He went, "Well, in theory, yes. However, we would prefer if you would just phone the commander of the nuclear weapons and let him know." And he's like, "Well, what happens if I get drunk?" And they're like, "Well, ideally, we'd prefer if you didn't get drunk."
Well, that's Shane out of a job.
Yeah.
Fuck.
God damn it. And one of my favourite understated British lines of all time, he said, "This is a direct communication to Moscow." He's like, "Right, so I pick that up and I can get through to the Kremlin." Like, again, in theory. "Well, have you never tested it?" He said, "Well, we did once. Who did you get?" "We think we got a receptionist, but she didn't speak much English."
Oh man, all right, that's it. We'll be back next week. Do we have another midweek game next week?
Wednesday.
Oh, okay. All right, so we'll be back on Tuesday. There we go. We'll be here as normal time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, because after that, we'll go back to the Europa League schedule.
Yeah, so it'll be exactly. Yeah.
Everything should be fairly normal. Mm-hmm. So. All right, that's it. David, of course, you can find it on Heart and Hand and not on Twitter because none of it, I don't know. I don't do anything. So, David, thanks.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, guys. Just a wee shout out. Remember our live show in London on 21st March with Paul Gascoigne. Yes. If you want tickets, go to Google Leicester Square Theatre Gaza and up it will pop. And hopefully see you there. Last few tickets remaining.
Oh, there you go. Todd, of course, you can still find on Twitter. Hey, it's TBA. Mm-hmm. You can find all the stuff at heyitstba.com. You just finished your run there. So
just finished the run. Closed off at Moose McGuire's. No laughter needed. And this Thursday, tomorrow, I'm at Laugh Lounge. And then at the end of the month, Write 'Em Up comes to Ottawa at Absolute Comedy. You can find the details at Write 'Em Up Show and also at heyitstva.com/calendar.
There we go. So that'll do it. Yeah, we'll be back next week. Usual time on Tuesday. Sorry for the delay if you were waiting for us, but obviously you should know the fucking reason that we weren't here yesterday. So there you go. So I'll do it. We'll talk to you all soon. Bye.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
You can't be fucking serious at that.